I'd like to welcome you to the NNDSS Modernization Initiative Overview. I'm Leslie Ann Helmis, and I'm the NNDSS Program Manager. I'm going to start by giving you a general overview of what we're working on, and then we're going to have people representing each of our three work streams also do a presentation. Bill Morrill is going to talk about the message mapping guide development process. Andrew Keel is going to talk about MVPS, the software that supports NNDSS. And then Michelle Huber is going to talk about the technical assistance activities that we're engaged in. This overview is really the overview for my initial section up front, and each of the folks will have an overview for their sections. So I wanted to just touch briefly on the CDC surveillance strategy and the vision for the surveillance strategy, because this is kind of the guidance that we're working under. The concept behind it is that we will have systems that are efficient and that get the right data and information to the right people at the right time in the right format in order to enable effective public health action. This is the key elements within that, the key issues that are being addressed as part of the surveillance strategy. Essential to that is the availability of and timeliness of surveillance data. Also, using emerging technology effectively to advance that effort, reducing the number of systems and improving the ones that we do keep, and then maximizing the effectiveness and performance and the coordination of the surveillance systems. So when we think about the NNDSS Modernization Initiative itself, this was implemented to take the to recognize in recognition that the infrastructure supporting NNDSS really was outdated. It needed to be strengthened. It needed to be modernized. We want it to be a standards-based system like the NED systems that you folks have implemented. Our objective is to get, or our goal is to provide more timely, comprehensive, and higher quality data to support public health decision making. And essential to that is this kind of operationalized goal of having HL7-based message mapping guides, have that be the way that you submit the data, and then have it processed through a system that is standard-based to give the data to the programs and also to provide feedback to the jurisdictions who are submitting the data. This is the performance objective that we're currently working against, or maybe we should say working towards. It is a very challenging objective considering the timeline we're working on. And we are interpreting this to say that by the end of 2016, 90% of the data will be coming in through the HL7 messages. You can see the graphic down there, and we turn in quarterly reports for progress. And this is sort of the metric that we're being marked against. We had higher percentages on this as the targets, and we told them that at the end of 2014 we were going to reevaluate, and we did lower them. We would like to meet that 2016 goal. Obviously, it's only going to happen if it works for you folks too, and if you're able to implement these messages and start sending the data. But we really are working toward that as a target. We want to get this in place. We know it meets your needs. And it meets the CDC program's needs, or it helps to meet some of their needs. So we really are working in this direction pretty aggressively. These are the three key components of NMI. The first one is related to the message mapping guides. And this has to do with getting data to the programs, or actually getting the data in from you in a format that works. So they are put together with input from the programs, from the technical folks that we have on our teams. We try to encourage the programs to work closely with the jurisdictions to get a sense of which data elements are reasonable to request and should be asked for in the guides. We do try to build these guides to an industry standard using HL7, and then the message mapping guide group also tries to establish the data processing rules that will be used, because they're the group that's primarily doing the interaction with the programs. The second stage is to develop the software that supports the processing of these guides. And that's the Message Validation Processing and Provisioning System, which we refer to as MVPS. One component of MVPS is the METS tool. And this is like MQF. It's a validation tool so that as you're developing your messages, you can test them against that tool and see if they're valid and do the tweaking and refining yourselves. We also are building a dashboard that will provide feedback on your messages when you go into production so that you will be able to see any fatal errors in the message. It'll also give you warnings about some key data quality issues that the programs think are important enough to put up there and flag. It does make the data available to the programs. It provisions that data, and it ensures the security and other federal requirements that we need to put around the data. The third component is technical assistance, and this is really what we recognize is needed to help you folks implement these messages. So this is a collaboration between CDC folks, between APHL and CSDE. It provides direct hands-on assistance to the jurisdictions, as well as providing tools and other things that are going to help you be able to do a lot of the work yourselves, so you're not relying on somebody else to do it. The intent is for knowledge transfer, so that you might need a lot of help at the beginning, but when you get to other messages down the road, it should be a lot easier for you, and you'll be able to work more independently. We also are trying to recognize what the burden is on health jurisdictions of implementing these messages and what challenges you're facing so that we can help to refine our process. We do have some key accomplishments we wanted to highlight. We've got four guides that are test ready and are in pilot testing right now. And that's the generic version 2, the hepatitis, the STD, and then congenital syphilis is in test ready stage, but it's not quite being piloted yet. We've got two more guides that took some additional refinement, and that's the mumps and pertussis guides. Those will go into piloting this fall, and we will roll the congenital syphilis in there too. We put some processes in place for conveying missing and unknown data. There was a big effort around all the data elements in all the message guides that are currently OMB approved for sending in NNDFS to try to begin some harmonization work. And while we started it, it really needs to be an agency-wide effort to get that going, and we hope you will also be involved in parts of that. And then we did some work this year to incorporate the lessons learned from working on the guides to change both some of the guide structures and our processes to try to improve it, make it more efficient, and allow us to move more quickly. With MVPS, they did a lot of requirements gathering. There have been initial versions of the METS tool and the MVPS dashboard built. We will be implementing those this spring, and we've got a lot of June dates when we get down to these things. But we are going to continue to develop that, obviously, as we have new guides coming along. And then the TA, we worked with the APHL folks. They did an assessment of the jurisdictions and their readiness. We assessed pilot jurisdictions and invited them to work with us. And we have been doing some testing of the guides and of the tools. And so we are currently piloting generic version 2, hepatitis, and the STD messages. And then we've got some plans for 2015. We're partway into this and have made some accomplishments through here. Our shorter-term goal than that end of 2016 goal is that by the end of this year, by the end of December, we would like to have, and we are really striving to have, at least 8 to 10 states sending production data for 3 of the message mapping guides. And that would be the Gen V2, the hepatitis, and the STD guide. You can see we've got some targets here. With those three guides, we are going to be testing and using the METS tool and the dashboard and having those available this month or early next month. In July, the Gen V2 and hepatitis guides, we hope will go to final status. We don't know if that will really happen, but that's our target, and that means that everybody who's not a pilot state can start to work with them. Data provisioning will be available to the programs. We're going to start to send data to them and start doing end-to-end testing with data from the pilot states in August. And then late October, we'll start importing bringing those three first guides into production. We're looking now, because of some changes we've had to do in the system, to having that maybe push into November, but we're hoping it will still be on that timeline. With mumps, pertussis, and congenital syphilis, in August, we hope to have the pilot-ready guides ready to go. In January, we hope to have that METS tool available so people can start testing their guides or their messages as they develop them. In February, we hope that the dashboard and the data provisioning will be ready, and we will start end-to-end testing. And then in May, we hope to start onboarding and production of those messages. We have started to work on arboviral conditions and varicella message mapping guides, And those are the guides we had out in an older version. But we are trying to update those and bring them to the newer version to be consistent with these guides. Our hope, well, we did start working with those programs in June and started the work on that. We hope that by 2016 in June, we will have the tools in place and be testing those, and that by October we will be doing onboarding and having you be able to send data. We do plan to add some other guides into this process, and so we will have dates for those, but we're not at that stage yet. So this is some information on basically which of the conditions are currently covered by a message mapping guide. And you can see, if you look on the left side of this graph, the test-ready section, there are 70 conditions that are covered by the guides that are currently in pilot that are test-ready. So that's 59% of the conditions. You can see the generic version 2 guide covers the biggest majority of those. Then there are a number covered by the STD guide, the hepatitis guide, and the congenital syphilis guide. And you know, when we're talking about hepatitis, we're talking about the A, B, C, the acute and the chronic, so that's where we get the variety of them in there. If you go further around the bottom, there are two that we've labeled as in development, and that's mumps and pertussis. We've got a set where we've engaged the program. That's going to be the arboviral message mapping guide, which covers 29 conditions, and then the varicella message mapping guide. And then there are 17 conditions for which we have not started a guide yet. So those will be on the list of conditions to work on. We do want to recognize and point out that many of the conditions that are covered by the generic guide will not meet the program's long-term needs. That's an interim solution that gets the data coming in the new process and provisioned the new way, but we will want to go back and build guides, disease-specific message guides for most of those. Where we are now is really when we're talking about building these guides, we're trying to use a fairly consistent structure in the guide, but we do need to work with the programs and identify which data elements they want to have included and sent for their conditions. So one of the questions that's probably on your mind is which conditions are coming next. We do not have a hard list. We have been kind of flexible and responding to the needs that have emerged within the agency and within the programs. These are the criteria that we're looking at, and we're looking at things like the volume of disease, the volume of reports that are involved, whether it's going to help us to retire NETs by incorporating that one into the system, whether the program gets data through another source or not. And you folks have told us very clearly that when you have to send data through multiple sources or through multiple routes, that's a much heavier burden on you, and those are conditions you would like us to target. So we also are trying to just look at, like I said, lots of factors that we're weighing in here. There's no formal list of priority. There's not that one of these weighs higher than the other. As we're looking at things, we just try to put the right weight on things and make a judgment. Part of it certainly is the readiness of the program and their willingness to sit down and work with us and make the commitment of time. The bottom element here talks about updating the guides. And I think one of the questions that's come up is, when are we going to turn around and say, okay, we gave you that guide, but now you're asking us to change it. We recognize that there are going to need to be updates from the programs and that there's going to be just changes in hopefully data standardization. So we will need to ask you to change or update the guides periodically. We're thinking that a 2 to 3 year cycle is probably appropriate for this, that at that point we might come back and say, okay, all the changes that have come up over the past 2 or 3 years, here's the set of them, these are the changes in the guide, we'd like you to please implement them. But we do want to try to get things onto a schedule so it's predictable and we're not hitting you with changes all the time. One of the efforts that's going on at CDC and that we did some work on was that initial data element harmonization. The intent is to bring the CDC programs together and have them work on harmonization so that we aren't asking for fever a whole lot of different ways, and so that we can make things more consistent. In the long run, this will help when we have a new condition and we've got something emergent and we need to implement the questions for it, because we'll be asking the questions the same way. We can plug them in. You'll know what to expect. It'll also helpfully make your system more consistent, but it really does take the programs all sitting down and discussing this and figuring out which ones they can agree on. We would like to have jurisdiction input in that, and the whole process hasn't been figured out, and it actually probably will not be our area of the agency that is going to coordinate this effort. But we do want to make sure that we've got health jurisdiction people at the table talking about what's reasonable to collect, what you think you can get from your providers, which questions mean the same thing to you on a data collection end, and which are really the important questions from your perspective. We are going through some issues of what kinds of information to include in the message mapping guides. The super simplistic approach says, oh, just go back to that NETS file and just send those basic elements, which really doesn't meet anybody's needs, and it certainly doesn't help to retire all those supplemental systems. The more thorough approach would incorporate everything that a program needs for surveillance from beginning to end and be exhaustive. It's probably not realistic for us at this point to be doing that, so probably what we're looking for is something in between where we're going to get the bulk of the data that's requested, the things that are needed on a routine basis, really the routine surveillance, but not special study type information. And then again, we're going to try to harmonize those data elements. A couple things we're doing to help harmonize or accelerate the NMI process. We did make some improvements in the message mapping guide itself this year, and I think Bill will talk a little bit more about this. But we're trying to look at both our process for developing the guides and improve that, as well as the structure of the guides. We have looked at the tools and the skills and how we can help accelerate things that way. And this really is looking at the technical assistance we're giving to you so that it will be easier for you to implement the guides. And then finally, there's that data harmonization element where we're hoping the CDC programs can work together and help to standardize how we collect data, what we ask for in the data, so that that will be more efficient also. And I just wanted to mention the CDC platform. When we initially started talking about this, we were not talking about MVPS, we were talking about the CDC platform. And that was a big concept that had a lot of features attached to it. We really have focused our efforts and are only focused on developing MVPS. At some point, it will probably be part of the CDC platform. But this is not the same platform as the ASTHO community, the public health community platform. The CDC platform is more focused on coordinating CDC tools internally, and that public health platform for the whole community is more focused on tools that everybody would be using. And I just wanted to offer that clarification so that if you're hearing both of them talked about and you seem to be hearing different things about them, it's because there is a reason for that. And I think that that is the end of my stuff. What we'd like to do is go through each of us and let us all present and then just have a larger discussion at the end. I think that might be constructive. So I'll turn this over to Bill.
Thanks, Roseanne. As you can see, Ruth was supposed to be here, but unfortunately she wasn't able to come, so I'm the middle guy. And I gratefully am filling in for her because I'm a local guy also. I'm from Newburyport. So yes, I am going to the Braves Red Sox game tonight, and I'm going to wear my Red Sox hat. And whoever wins, I'm going to be a happy fan. So here's just a quick summary of what I'm going to be talking about, the MMG development work, some lessons learned, of which there were many from the first year of NMI, diagrams, and what we call lovingly call our life cycle process map. But it'll be referred to differently here, but I like life cycle process as a cooler name anyway. Some of the message restructuring content changes that we've made, and then a bit about the harmonization that Leslie Ann alluded to earlier. So as Leslie Ann did mention, we have four pilot test-ready guides at the moment, generic version 2. As you know, some of you may know there's five older guides from 2010 that are out there now. There is a generic version 1. So version 2 will be used with all the new disease-specific MMGs and can be sent alone for up to 52 conditions, which may or may not need individual guides down the road. So there's hepatitis, which covers 7 of the hepatitis, STD, and congenital syphilis. And the reason we decided on congenital syphilis at this point is, even though it's low incidence, we thought we'd knock out all the STDs at the same time, so we did this to accommodate the program, and that's why it was also done right now. So mumps pertussis will be pilot test ready in August, we hope. That's, I think, the tentative date's early in August. And then, as Leslie Ann also alluded to, we have arboviral varicella in process now. We just had our kickoff meetings with both of those programs. And invasive pneumococcal disease is one that we potentially be dealing with later this year. Lessons learned. We learned that the CDC programs need to work with us before the MMG development process begins. So that includes vetting the data elements of interest and the valid values with the jurisdictions. We need to document and verify the requirements for the program before the MMG development begins also. So again, this is the teams are coming together a lot earlier and also working with the programs a lot earlier in the process than we have done with the first 6 guides. We need representation from all the programmatic and technical groups at the beginning of the process, and we want to build specific quality assurance steps into the process, and so that they can be conducted across the teams together. Another set of lessons learned: technology tools to enable requirements to be used and managed across all the teams and the three different data streams. MVPS and MBS need better change control management. We've been responding to changes almost on an ad hoc basis. We want to have a better control of that. At least from the pilot test ready on, it's really imperative that we manage those controls, the change control, and to assess the actual impact of these changes, if they're critical, if they're high, low, or medium, and when they would be implemented. We need more effective governance as well across all the teams working in a matrix environment. This is referring to us actually trying to use some of the Agile techniques. Some of you are probably familiar with Agile techniques, with stand-up meetings and just having matrix teams working horizontally and vertically across guides and functionally within the teams as well. So we're hoping that'll actually eliminate a lot of downtime in developing the guides. And we were hoping to have complimentary binoculars available at this time, but funding was cut. I'm sure you can't relate to that at all, so you just have to guess what some of this is. But this is available online. I did upload it. You can see it. And to be truthful with you, this is just the first four steps in developing a guide. There's a backside on this also for four more steps. This is just to get a guide from kickoff meeting with the program to what we call a pilot test ready stage. And then the back is moving it to final stage and implementation, the coding of the system, and then having pilot testing, UAT testing, going live, having a final guide available for everyone in the jurisdictions. So it's an evolving lifecycle process. This is version 37. So you can see we've had many iterations of it. Some of the restructuring efforts that we've done, we found that the current HL7 structure that was being used was more constricted than open. They were actually using fewer portions of the message than was available. So we opened up such sections as next of kin, the specimen section, and the notes and comments section. And for you technical people, that we're talking about OBXs and OBRs and that such, so for the technical acronyms, I'll throw those out there as well. But here's another example where you may not be able to read it, but just highlighting where the information is put in one OBX segment. Again, you may not be able to see the detail on this, but this is actually a snapshot of what a message mapping guide looks like. And another thing that we did during the restructuring is we found a need for both laboratory and vaccine templates. So we've come up with some shared generic, if you will, you want to use that term, generic laboratory and vaccine data elements that can be used across all conditions. So we've actually developed some templates, and the templates themselves are available in the electronic version of this. I don't have the appendices here, but you can see that if you want to see the actual data elements that are included in those. These were implemented to promote the use of harmonized data elements, as we mentioned, and they are optional to kind of reduce your stress level. We're saying optional. And the jurisdictions can use them if these already exist in their surveillance system. Some other restructuring changes: the standard identifiers for the questions concept are used when applicable. So that means if there's a LOINC or a SNOMED code available, we're going to go ahead and use them instead of working with FIN IDs or also RX norm. So if they've been put in for the LOINC or SNOMED codes, or if they are already in effect, we're going to use those. So there's detailed HL7 mapping information, which gives you more guidelines on how to map to legacy systems. There's also data elements coming in with value sets, which is the last one here, where we've actually enumerated, such as signs and symptoms and complications, what's in a value set. Some other restructuring content changes, I think was mentioned earlier also, the way of conveying unknown. And after well over a year of discussion, we came back to using a string of nines actually outside the normal range, actually accommodates it, and it's actually being used in the other legacy systems now. So the tried and true is actually something that we decided to go back to because it was working and there were no issues with it, and everyone was okay with using what had already been proven to be successful. We also have three OBR segments that were created, and sections in the message were helping to organize the content and help map the data elements from the different data sources. So we have an EPI section, which has all the case report data elements, including EPI interpretive laboratory information. Then there are the two optional sections I mentioned, the laboratory. So LIS systems, ELR, or fax or paper reports can be accommodated there. The vaccine section, there can be sent core data elements from an IIS or immunization information system, or from a non-electronic vaccination card or report. So this, the rest of the presentation is really about data assessment, data element assessment for harmonization. We had a poster on Sunday and it was up till early today, and I was told I had to take it down by noon, so I don't know if any of you got to see it, but there was a poster that we presented, and we were discussing a minuscule 5,942 data elements for 90 notifiable conditions plus a generic. And how did we come up with all that? Well, we looked at the OMB packages, Office of Management and Budget, for those of you who don't know OMB. We have the consolidated NNDSS package, which I believe went in live and went into effect January 2014, and is for good for 3 years. So we looked at, we actually asked all the programs what data elements they wanted or projected as needed for their diseases of interest. So we have that, that's 0728. We also had active ones for HIV and tuberculosis, and their policy actually for changing those OMB packages a little more flexible than ours, because we had a restriction on if you added core to the generic core elements, you had to go through more, a revision which took longer than a non-substantive change. So they actually had a little more flexibility. So to accommodate that need, we're actually redoing our policy to be more flexible as well, so we don't have to wait quite as long for new changes to the core elements. And during the assessment process, which took almost a year, I think, from the time we started, we came up with six overarching categories, which are demographics, clinical, treatment, lab, vaccine, and EPI. As you can see, almost 50% of those data elements of the 5,900 are in the EPI section, not surprising. So we had to actually subdivide that into many subcategories, travel, food exposures, social history, et cetera. And then we created, I believe, 18 summary reports to describe the categories, the subcategories, and the themes within those subcategories that might be good candidates for harmonization. So as an example, here's a subcategory under EPI of travel. So 52 conditions now ask, out of the 90, questions about travel. There's 12 themes in that question about travel. These are the 12 themes. And you can see these refer to the page numbers in our summaries. So we decided we'll look at any travel. So 12 conditions ask questions about any travel, and they ask them in 12 different ways. You can see how this increases exponentially. Here's the conditions that ask them, and you know, what's missing is, did you travel to Disney World while wearing a clown costume or something like that? You know, it's like, I mean, seriously, the programs get really specific about what they want. They want a time component, they want lead time for exposure, post-exposure time. It gets really complicated, and this is one of the easier ones to deal with. This is just a summary of what the reports look like. They've been provided to the programs, I understand, at this point. So there's four different parts to it, and an overall summary at the beginning. So the category scope, theme information, discussion points and recommendations, and then appendices at the end, which tells you how we actually tried to come up with all these data elements with FinVADs and the OMB packages that I mentioned. So what's the goal of this? The goal is to harmonize NNDS elements across the CDC programs in order to lessen the burden on the jurisdictions for collecting and reporting the data. So we are looking for the programs to actually interact with jurisdictions as we do this process, and when we come to a program and to work with them for the first time, you know, we're going to they'll have seen these summaries already, so they know what to expect and hopefully make the efforts to work on harmonization within their conditions. The NNDSS staff is again has identified the candidate data elements while developing these new MMGs, and we developed the background information. So we're hoping that work groups with representation across CDC by the programs will consider involving ServSAG, which is Surveillance Services Advisory Group. Is that what ServSAG is? Sciences. Surveillance Science. Okay, thank you. You forget what the acronyms mean after you've been there a while. So reporting jurisdictions and the CST involvement is critical. Up front, we want to establish the ground rules to agree on how to adjudicate disagreements, define success and outcomes, document all the discussions and decisions that occur. And then Surveillance Leadership Board which Dr. Chesley Richards, I believe, chairs now, is going to provide oversight of this process. So we already provided these summaries to him, and they're going to take the next steps to developing these work groups within the programs to address the harmonization. So another part of the proposal is to create a data element repository of the harmonized elements to allow ease of identification and use, and then review the potential repositories such as FinVADS. It's usually the one that comes up most often, and the National Library of Medicine has a very good one as well, and then plan for continuously maintaining and curating that repository. So DHIS will incorporate the harmonized data elements into the MMGs as they are developed or updated, so it'll be an ongoing, continuous process. And actually, I'm coming to the end of mine, so I guess I'm doing pretty well as far as the time. Here's a couple of the links to our website, the overall NNDSS website, also the draft message mapping guide, which is in there as well. Just for some of you who haven't seen it or may have seen the old one, there's actually a newer page, a new draft MMG page that we've just done, because we moved a lot of guides to test ready status, and we had to accommodate some CDC regulations about how the overall look should be, so we've complied with that. So it's going to look a little different than what you may have been used to before if you saw it previously. And one other change that we're now actively making is when we display all these guides, obviously we're going to be working on so many and then developing new ones and then rolling them from a draft to a pilot test ready to final stages, we thought it was just going to be continuously run on page and it was going to be really tedious to go through that. So we're going to probably collapse those under the conditions. So if you click on those, it'll be an expanding panel, and then you'll see all the different artifacts, as we call them, the test scenarios, the MMG, any other supporting documentation. So they'll be stacked by condition is how the new page is going to look. And I think that is it for me.
So my name is Andrew Keel. I'm the MVPS technical lead, and MVPS is the Message Validation Processing and Provisioning System. And today I'm going to be giving a brief overview of MVPS, what it is, how it works, go over some of the accomplishments over the last year that we've had, some of the efficiencies that we're going to see downstream from these MMG restructuring and then also the new life cycle, and then conclude finally with a little bit of a deep dive into our upcoming dashboard and then also the METS team. So what is the Message Validation Processing Provisioning System? Really, it's the software system that takes a message mapping guide, implements it as a receiver, and then is able to parse and validate that message and then provision it to the programs. We also have the METS tool, which is a message testing tool that we provide to jurisdictions so they can test their messages as they're developing them. And there are also some resources available there, which we'll see a little bit later on in the presentation. This is our end-to-end view of the MVPS system. We have the message that comes in. We do a structural validation, which is against the conformance profile in the MMG. We have business rule validation, business rules we might receive from the program. It also validates against the FinVADS vocabulary cache for our content validation, and then gets fed into a processing database. The processing database feeds not only the data provisioning database, which the programs get the data from in their NETs and HL7 views, but also our dashboard. Now, the NETs and HL7 views, the NETs view is one view that the programs are used to receiving currently, and we're providing that view as a means for the programs to continue using their current analytical systems to get the data out of MVPS. Our HL7 view is a relational database view, which will be provided to the programs ahead of time so they can also reprogram their systems or adjust their systems, their analytical systems, to pull the data out of MVPS. Additionally to those two views, we will provide different relational views as well, depending on program needs. This is a list of some of the MVPS accomplishments to date this year. We're currently supporting the flip vaccine preventable disease messages in production for four jurisdictions. This has been going on actually for a year and a half now, but made significant steps forward this year and look to receive another fifth jurisdiction. Migration from a single server to multi-server environment to improve performance. Currently, MVPS is all software layers are operating on a single server, which means processing database, validation, and also the provisioning database and dashboard are all on one server. We're taking these software layers, separating them out onto separate servers, and that transition actually will occur within the next month. We have dashboard development user security roles, a huge effort this year defining these requirements, and we'll go into a little bit later on to the dashboard, but the security roles allow users to determine, or jurisdiction managers to allow their users to view certain types of data, perhaps by condition, and then also whether or not they can see the raw message. We've implemented NMG message processing for generic version 2, STD, and hepatitis. Data provisioning support for all message formats, including GEMI2, STD, and hepatitis, are currently under development. And then finally, we're integrated now with the Streamline message mapping BI development lifecycle. This slide shows some of the efficiencies as a result of the new MMGs and new lifecycle. It's sort of the cause-effect diagram here, chart. The first row is really the summary of all of these. Providing the more uniform approach to development in MMGs has the downstream effect where we have a streamlined development cycle and process as we're now integrated in this lifecycle earlier on and can interact with the programs on what they might see in the system earlier on. We provide the programs with earlier exposure and views to the data structure, again, so they can see that what that looks like and adjust their systems. The use of templates will definitely increase the overall development lifecycle as our developer will have less of a learning curve per new message mapping guide. We also, introducing this early collaboration, there's a lot of clarifications that go back with developer that has been seen here that we're now streamlining, and as we get in that process earlier, we can clarify that up front instead of being a more serialized process where at the end we would do that collaboration and perhaps have to jump back earlier to the beginning of the MMG lifecycle. That can all be done now in parallel up front. And then also we have these stage gate reviews throughout the lifecycle to increase our efficient creation of MMGs for ensuring that consensus is at each one of those stage gates as before we move forward to the next step. This slide talks about shows our high level transition off the legacy systems as we begin to take on each one of these new MMGs and their conditions. So for instance, the new HL7 hepatitis MMG, as a jurisdiction incorporates this for the very first time, we will pick up all data streams for hepatitis coming into the CDC and run them through the MVPS system, which would include the MBS master message and then the next message. All of this data will be viewed on the dashboard and then provisioned to the program as a single source of data for the hepatitis condition. All other conditions will continue to use the legacy processes. The MVPS dashboard. So the MVPS dashboard will allow jurisdictions and programs to view transactional data as the messages come into the MVPS system. This is a huge effort that's been put forward and we think will have a lot of value for both jurisdictions and programs together. It's used to determine message status, including errors and warnings, managing the users, and then also has the appropriate security to define by condition and then also permission to see the raw message. The next is a bit of a deep dive into the dashboard. We'll talk about the features, the overall snapshot, detailed view, managing users, and MVPS transition. The dashboard snapshot here is the landing page that a user would see as they logged into the MVPS system. We have by program, messages received, completed, errored, and then not processed. And not processed would mean it's in queue to be processed and not either completed or errored. Also on the top of this page, you'll notice there's a user management section where if the user had the proper role, such as the MVPS user support manager listed above, they would be able to add users, remove users, allow users to see certain conditions, and have access to that raw message. Someone clicking on any one of these hyperlinks would be drilling down a little bit deeper into the program there, and you can see, maybe it's not easy to see. but instead of listing the overall count, it goes and lists all of the messages for that condition based on range that's selected. Here we see that detailed view on the bottom left, and then also an example of what happens if you click on the details of a message. You can see the warnings listed up top in the top right-hand corner, and then as you hover over that particular warning, that section in the message that it's referring to is highlighted, easily allowing troubleshooting efforts to be able to analyze this and then report back and either update the systems or work with programs to identify a problem. This slide talks about how we add and edit users. Jurisdiction user access will be managed using SAMS. So as we pilot jurisdictions on, there will be SAMS training on how to access the system through SAMS. And then the bottom sort of flow walks through how to add a user, but most importantly to point out here is when you, in that big box there on the right side, when signing or editing a user, you can limit by program, condition, jurisdictions, laboratories, and then raw message access, some of the features that we can restrict user access. METS walkthrough. METS, again, is the message evaluation and testing tool. It is a separate system from MVPS. However, it is built on the same code base. So jurisdictions can have the confidence that if a message passes through in METS, they will receive the same result in MVPS as they send the messages in production. There are two ways to load a message into METS, copying the text directly, pasting, and then hitting validate there, which is on that first screen, or there is a file upload feature. It is a single message only at this time. As the message is validated, it goes through the same structure, business rule and content validation as the MVPS system. Any structural errors that prohibit parsing, the METS system will stop, but it will still show where that is in the message up to where it was able to be read. Errors that are, for instance, wrong data type, the system will continue processing even though there was an error in the system and display warnings. Again, this is something that we think will cause better efficiency with the jurisdictions testing the messages, not having to upload and repeat until the message actually is processed through. They can get as many errors and warnings up front as possible. The METS tool also has two additional resources, a resources tab that shows, given a condition, what artifacts the system is using to validate the message against. So you have the FinSpec, the message mapping guide, and then condition code, whether it's valid or active or not. And then also it has a vocabulary tool where plugging in a certain value set OID will bring back results on what the content validator is validating against. Colors didn't come out very well here. This is our targeted schedule for the next 12 months. Two swim lanes here, sort of. Gen V2 hepatitis STD are on the top. Mumps, pertussis, and congenital syphilis on the bottom. This shows a lot of our activities leading up to a production or go live. And so really the key dates here would be that far right October go live for Gen V2 hepatitis and STD, and then mumps, pertussis, and congenital syphilis on the bottom, that far right date of June 2016. But the steps in between, we have the end-to-end testing, whereas we have that processing and provisioning available. We can have the pilot jurisdiction send that message in and then provision the data to the program, and we can test not only message processing but provisioning that data to the programs as well. This is all for my presentation, Michelle.
Good afternoon. So I'm either the caboose or the train that drives from the back, or we haven't quite figured out which, but we're the ones that are, me and the team that we have assembled through CST and APHL, who have many members here this afternoon, are the ones who are working with the jurisdictions to actually help pilot and implement the guides once they're finalized. So I'm just going to go very quickly over what it is we do within technical assistance, kind of what our current status is and some future plans. So our overall goal really is to help support all of the states and local jurisdictions in sending these new HL7 messages based on the newer revised message mapping guides to CDC and MVPS so they can be processed and provisioned to the programs. And we kind of do this in a number of different ways. When we first started, we had a very large group that was called a larger state implementation team. And as we developed along the way, we kind of learned that it was too large a group, and there were specific areas that we really needed to focus on. So we kind of broke the group down into smaller groups that all interact together in various ways. Many of us are a multiple of these positions, but it's also a cross-cutting group that works across many places within DHIS itself, as well as within the other partners that we're working with. So starting at the bottom, across the top, it may help as well, is that we actually have the Technical Assistance Implementation Team. And this is a group that's really dedicated to working with MVPS to kind of address those true technical implementations. They're working on helping us with the vocabulary, the standards, and making sure that we're implementing the guides consistently across the group. And that team works very, very hard. They are working all the time with the APHL Technical Assistance Team and meet at least once a week to kind of update and figure out what it is our issues and challenges are and how to address them. We also have a communication and training team. This team really looks at trying to figure out what are the tools and resources that are being developed to help the jurisdictions and kind of package them in such a way that they can be easily and readily acceptable to all of the jurisdictions at any particular time, and try to make and get out the message as clearly as we can about what is happening within NMI and also within what are the next steps that a jurisdiction should actually take. There's also a huge training component to that that really looks at what sorts of trainings in combination with MVPS are necessary and helpful to provide to the jurisdictions. So as Andrew was talking, he was talking about METS and the dashboard. Those are two critical trainings that we'll be doing for the jurisdictions as a whole. We're starting first with the pilot sites and then moving on to everyone so that they have a really good feel for what it is they need to do to get access to the dashboard, what's contained in the dashboard, and get some efficiencies in how to play with it, as well as the METS tool and kind of how to direct them to other trainings as we may identify them and become available. And in the last group is the evaluation. So as part of the overall process of NMI, we really want to look to see what is happening within technical assistance to begin with, but then larger within NMI. So we can first identify what are some challenges and barriers that we need to be aware of that we can address or develop issues to help move that stage forward, or what are some tools that are there, as well as gathering what are a lot of the lessons learned that we're learning as we're beginning to implement this that we can easily either develop or share tools that were developed in different jurisdictions, or share other lessons learned. We'll often move into more of a monitoring and measurement mode as we move forward. But at this time, we're really focused on those two. And also with the help of CSTE, we're very focused on trying to figure out what the cost and the burden is on the states of trying to actually implement the message mapping guide. And then at the top, it's really comprised of all three of those groups. The team leads of all of the various groups build into this larger leadership team, which also includes Leslie Ann Holmes, Paula Yoon, and Jeff Engel at various times to kind of help us make broader decisions about what it is that we need to do to go forward with technical assistance to make sure that we're meeting the needs and hopefully staying on track and meeting the goals that we've set forth. This is a slide many of you have probably seen before. This really talks about what it is that we do when we go out and provide technical assistance primarily for non-NBS states. Those jurisdictions that are using the NBS system actually are working through Michael Wadajo and his team at CDC to provide technical assistance, and it's much more focused on the NBS system and developing the tools and resources within that to be able to implement the guides out in the jurisdictions. But since so many of the states have various systems, we wanted to provide kind of a uniform technical approach that we could look at that would address those who have custom systems as well who have those who have other systems such as Maven or Atlas in ways that we could be reusable and used for multiple jurisdictions over time. So the technical assistance team, which is primarily comprised of the APHL staff, actually go out with the jurisdictions and help them with extracting the data from their systems, helping to map the data to the new messages, helping to create the actual message guide or the message themselves, hopefully building some skills along the way for how to work with their Rhapsody or other integration engines that are out there and available to work, and facilitating and helping to transport that message from the jurisdictions back to CDC to help with that exchange. And as Leslie had mentioned earlier, our real goal is to hopefully build some capacity within the states that people feel much more comfortable with the guides and that they can move forward along this process and road as we go along. At the same time, we also realize if we're really asking you to implement these guides, and you heard us refer to the tight timeline that we're on earlier and trying to move things forward, that it's critical for CDC to provide as much help and resources as we can to the jurisdictions to help remove some of that burden from you, as well as build those skills and resources. Because of that, as most of you may know, the technical assistance is also included in the ELC, Health Information Systems Cooperative Agreement. And so this is going to be a long-term process for us. It's not just something that's going on during the pilot phase, but will continue as we move forward. As part of the pilot, or as part of the TA implementation, we're also looking to have a few states work with us as pilot sites to help us initially, like I said, refine the message mapping guide, make sure that it's easily to understand, that it's something that can be implemented, as well as helping to kind of refine what's going on within MVPS and make sure that that system is providing the information and data that we need and providing it back to the programs as well as through the dashboard. So in this sort of time frame, we have worked with various sites as well as CDC programs together to try and identify states and local jurisdictions that may be able to help us with this. And we tried to find things based on who has the experience and the capacity to do this, because we don't want to add undue burden to jurisdictions. Who's really ready? Who can help us provide reusable, scalable implementation? So it's really important for us to have a mix of various types of jurisdictions and the systems they're using, as well as somewhat the capacity that they have to kind of get a better feel for how easy or difficult this may be to do in a jurisdiction. They're also helping us to provide feedback on the tools and resources that are being developed along the way so that they can, so that we can refine them as we go along and provide them out when we provide them out to the larger audience for people to use on their own when they begin to implement the message mapping guides once they're final, that they're clear and easy to use and understand. And also the pilot sites are asked to participate in some of those evaluation activities that I mentioned earlier. Right now, they're engaged in several different activities, and I've sort of addressed this along the way. I forget what I've written because I haven't looked at the slide deck in a while, so I've been busy doing a million other things. You happen to know your ELC cooperative agreement that you submitted. Once you get done with them, they all end up with us, so we've been very busy processing that on this end. So part of that is really about implementing and testing those pilot-ready guides themselves, testing and providing feedback on the MVPS, providing that feedback for the tools, as well as helping with the evaluation process. Now I'm going to kind of transition into sort of a timeline of where we are and where we're going to be going over the next couple of weeks. And this is kind of really TA-focused and really CDC-focused, but it'll hopefully give you an idea of what it is that the jurisdictions can kind of expect as we move forward. We have wrapped up and completed what we called phase one. This really started almost a year ago, a little over a year ago now, where we were working really primarily with just Michigan to help them implement the hepatitis guide as it stood at the time and see if our MVPS system could process it along the way. As part of that process, we began implementing or developing technical assistance tools. And then we did a broad assessment, as was mentioned earlier, of all of the sites just to see where they were, what their capacity was, what they were using, what their systems were like. We've now moved into what we're calling phase two, and this really started probably around January of this year, and it's kind of moving into June. Primarily, and by the end of the month, we'll actually kind of be at the end of wave one of phase two, as we call it, as trying to move people quickly through the process along the way. When we started that, the one thing we've really learned is that what is happening today and where somebody stands today is not the same as tomorrow, a month from now, or 6 months from now. So although we had assessed all of the pilot sites when we first began, we realized a lot of things could have changed. They may have had system updates, they may have had changes in personnel, things that could have prohibited them from actually participating as a pilot site. So we went back out and did a quick reassessment of where they were. And we are now working with those pilot sites. To begin with, we started out working with, let's see if I can test my knowledge on my head, California, Michigan, Minnesota, Oregon, and Florida, our initial five pilot sites that are working with us. And then for this round, because we're kind of trying to move things very quickly, are really working on implementing the hepatitis case notification message and the STD case notification message. The other jurisdiction that is working closely with us during this time frame is New York, who's really sort of serving as our independent study, so to speak. They're given the tools and resources that we have available to us that we're providing to the other pilots, but they're also kind of working much more independently. They can reach out and ask us for some questions, but they're certainly not getting the same level of technical assistance as the other pilot sites. After July, we'll actually move into what we're calling Wave 2, where we'll continue to implement these particular guides, and we'll work with Arizona, Colorado. We'll continue to work with New York to see if they need some additional assistance that we may not have been able to accomplish on their own, as well as identifying a couple other states that kind of can help us test these messages along the way. And I'm probably getting ahead of myself. So in June, what we are hoping to do, in June we're really focused on the pilot site at this point in time, of both of those sites from Wave 1 and Wave 2. This will give us a good chance to see what is happening and how well all of our processes are in place. So we're going to provide training on SAMS, which is how folks will access the dashboard. And we recognize that a number of jurisdictions have people that already have access to SAMS, but we'll still continue to work to make sure that we get the right people trained. We'll work on providing training on METS and make it available for the new messages. We'll continue with piloting hepatitis and STD. And at this time, the MBS jurisdictions are also beginning to test their beta versions of the messages that they're going to use for hepatitis and STD, and really begin testing the METS MVPS dashboard, as well as the message processing part of the assignment of the program. In July, we're going to continue to work with those to help provide training to process messages. We'll begin technical assistance with other jurisdictions. We'll begin working with the jurisdictions to help pilot the Gen V2 conditions. There are 52 conditions that are only sent using the generic version 2 message, and we'll start working to try and integrate that. MBS will continue to work on implementing their things, as well as we'll begin to identify the pilot sites for MUNTS, pertussis, and congenital syphilis messages. And at the same time, although those are focused on the pilot, we'll also start working with trying to provide overall training for all of the jurisdictions regarding the dashboard. Because as Andrew pointed out earlier, once the jurisdictions begin sending messages to CDC, the idea is that all of the messages in any format for that condition will come through there. So having the dashboard available and being able to look and process your message, whether you're sending it in NETS, NDS, or HL7, should be a benefit to everyone. In August, we'll just kind of, we keep rolling along, keep moving forward. We'll also actually begin the pilot testing for the congenital syphilis months and pertussis, continue to guide training. And we are hoping that at that point, when we will hopefully begin to finalize or move the guides into that final stage for the actual message mapping guides. And once that has reached stage three of the new process, that will be posted on the web, and anyone, all of the jurisdictions will have access and the ability to implement those guides. And MBS will be released in a new version. In September, we kind of keep rolling along. It's kind of, at this stage, we're sort of getting into a framework where we're kind of keeping things moving along, and we'll be piloting with some and continuing to implement, and also begin to provide technical assistance to other jurisdictions who are now ready, once the guides are finalized, to implement the guides. Kind of October to the December timeframe is when we're hoping that MVPS will be ready for moving into production with the data. So we'll begin to test those processes and actually begin to onboard jurisdictions, as well as begin to continue to refine congenital syphilis mumps and pertussis. And then from January to June of next year, we'll continue to do the onboarding. We're hoping to start the production of the mumps and pertussis and congenital syphilis messages. We'll continue with the ongoing stage three, and then also identify any pilot sites for the next message mapping guides as they go along the way. And then July, we'll still continue to work. And so it kind of, as you can see, what we're trying to get into is a repetitive process where we're providing the same sort of process as we move forward with all of the message mapping guides, so that we can refine it and continue to grow and develop it along the way. And this is our contact information. The one last thing I want to say about technical assistance before we open it up for questions is that tomorrow morning we have a roundtable bright and early that will be focused primarily on technical assistance. It will cover not only NMI technical assistance, but ELR and other technical assistance opportunities that are out there.
Why don't you flip to the next slide, which is our disclaimer, so therefore we've shown it to you. context. So I think we want to open up the questions. I know we've hit you with a lot of information, but we wanted to kind of give you the overview first and then let you come up with questions.
No questions? Okay, we can go.
We have a baseball game to get to.
My question is about the MVPS. At what point in the process does the case ID get truncated? And will it be possible to not truncate it?
So, that is not an option known to the MVPS.
That's the non-MVPS. That's one of the reasons we're putting MVPS in, because it's CDS or DMV that does that?
CDS.
And that's on the dashboard that's truncated.
That was purely for test visuals.
Okay. So maybe it's no.
It's not the plan to truncate that.
You may need to come to the microphone because they're recording things, so it's helpful if you can speak there.
We are certified for generic one, but we continue to send the SYNET message because the program areas want their SYNET data. And I cannot envision that we will ever be implemented in the time of many to implement generic version two, because we want the program areas to still have their data. You know, so I have a great concern with that. I want to continue the process, but I think, and I want everyone to recognize that the program area and getting that extended data together into the message mapping guide and the HL7 transmission is important. And so it did look like you were allowing for the message to continue, but we don't want to run parallel messages.
So
technical difficulty.
So we did work with the programs and talk to them. And the programs who are listed for that generic version 2 have said that the information in generic version 2 is sufficient, and they will be satisfied with that. So I believe that everybody who is in generic version 1 is incorporated into generic version 2, and they have all said that they will be satisfied with that data.
Okay.
So you would not need to send another transmission. And this is, you know, this is, we, that doesn't mean we won't develop message mapping guides for them down the road. We certainly intend to do that, but at this point you should be able to transition over.
On your mess testing tool, is that going to be like behind a secure portal so we can paste real messages in, unlike the NIST testing tools where you have to have a fake testing bridge?
It is not.
It's going to be a public.
Public.
So you have to do what NIST, you have to have a fake
correct
message, and then when you go to a real message, you might have other, or you'll test real messages in a different way.
So Michelle might have something to add too. The METS tool is open. There's nothing protected on it. You put your data there, you run the algorithms, you'll see it. It doesn't save the message though, so once it's gone, it's gone. But we would definitely recommend you use test data there, not use real data. Many of the states have a test system of some sort that they use for either development or that they use with users so that they can, you know, go in and learn and use it as a training system. So we would suggest that you use that to generate the messages you're going to put in the METS tool, but use the script or the extraction you're going to use to generate your real messages, and that would be how the METS tool would allow you to test and develop your messages and refine them. Michelle, do you want to add?
So, I mean, one thing in regards to primaries that continue to ask us to send us, like, copies of our paper, because they decided then that they don't want copies of our paper, they'll be happy with the generic.
there's always a question of whether the question we think we're asking is heard by the program, and whether the answer we get back is actually the answer to the question we thought we asked, or if they interpreted it differently. I would assume that if a program is sending data through, like, GEMBI-1 or NETS, and they are also currently asking you for paper, when they said, yes, the NETS transmission or the GEMBI-2 transmission is fine, they were probably assuming you would still fax that piece of paper. So I don't know that it gets rid of all that. We are trying to push in that direction, trying to work that direction. We understand that a priority for you folks is eliminating those multiple transmissions. One of the other groups that we answer to is internal folks within CDC. And there, one of the priorities we have been given is to retire the NETS tool and the NETS processes because they are antiquated. So in some cases where we may not be able to shut off the paper for you yet, but if we can move all those records into GEMBI-2 and it gets us closer to shutting off NETS, there is a move forward for us and a benefit. So I realize it's not the greatest return, you know, for you folks, but we do really, when we're sitting down with the program and we're talking about incorporating a lot of data elements that haven't been captured in a transmission before, it'll take a little more work to define it and refine it and make sure it works. So we do want to get into working with them because we realize it's going to have some major implications for you folks. But I can't assure you that they're saying, don't bother sending the paper anymore. I think they're just saying the electronic transmission we're getting is fine.
And then I maybe had a suggestion for the pre-message discussions where you're incorporating all the states and the discussions on the message mapping guides and the questions that are contained in there and the primaries. I'm never supposed to do that. But I feel I like your example of the
travel.
Yeah, that was a great one.
That was an easy one, too.
And, I mean, many of us have struggled our way through building our own systems, have struggled our way through that very question. And we ended up finally just with one question that said, did the person travel within the incubation period? Not within this period. You know, so I asked you before the questions get to the individual preliminaries and the message mapping guides that we're going to discuss to maybe work together on some consolidation of that.
Well, one of the proposals was that we put this whole process on hold and we do reconciliation, harmonization of all the data elements, and then we pick up the process again. And we realized that that just wasn't realistic because it meant we were probably going to be a couple of years out. So what we are looking at is pulling together the CDC programs and hopefully, like you said, the people in the states and the local health departments who have worked out a lot of these issues and realized that everybody is really asking the same question. They just all happen to develop their own way of asking it. So bring those folks together. We're not going to stop the development of the message map and guides, though, because it would just take forever. So what we're thinking is we will keep going forward where there are questions that we really think there is evidence of harmonization. We will try to push that direction, but eventually we may need to come back and say, okay, we developed that guide 2 years ago, but now there are these 50 or 60 data elements that have been harmonized. We need to incorporate them into the message.
Because this preliminary work has been done, when we go to the programs, we can say to them, hey, you know, 50 other programs are asking this question in 25 different ways. We have a suggestion. Would this work for you? Would this accommodate all your needs, having it phrased this way? Maybe we get down to two questions or one question, whatever. But it's good that we've done that, and now when we go to the programs and work with them on their conditions, we can suggest something.
Jana Hamilton from the Florida Department of Health, and I guess this is very similar to the things that Lori said. First, I mean, I really want to thank you for pointing out that example about travel, because I think that is one that is one example, but is near and dear to the hearts of people in this room, because it represents some of the complexity and the challenges. As much to the room, I would also like to say that there is a CSDE position statement that is getting discussed Wednesday at 2 p.m. that is about the issue associated with harmonizing our data elements and also the process of case notification, so that process of sending our data to CDC. And certainly, you know, these issues around submitting data and then duplicate data requests, and you know, your example was paper, but I think we all have examples of plenty of others that aren't paper but are in-hand data entry and other things. So I just want to point that out for folks if you're interested in that discussion, and thank you for this very nice presentation.
So there's a good plug for harmonization.
Hi, I'm Cindy from New Jersey. Thank you so much for getting these message maps guys where they are. In New Jersey, several years ago, we were one of the first states who started developing a message mapping guide with the CDC. Since then, we lost all our resources. And my question is that we really are excited about this, but we are trapped for resources. So what are our options? If you turn off net and don't have the resources, that is one of the major reasons why we are providing technical assistance. As part of technical assistance, we really do it in three different ways. We have ways where people have a lot of resources and are able to do it and just need some help here and there, and we do a lot of that virtually through our technical assistance team. But we also know that there are lots of jurisdictions who have very limited resources, have very limited skill sets within their own health departments, just given resources and other challenges. So through technical assistance, we actually send a team, or have the potential to send a team on site that will work with you to kind of help prepare for our visit. We're in the process of clearing a guidebook that goes literally through step-by-step on some of the things the state can do to kind of prepare for doing that technical assistance so that it can be a longer-term process, and many of the steps are going to remain consistent. And then there's a hybrid approach that's somewhere in between the two. So as we move forward, we're piloting them now. Once they're actually finalized, you can send a request for technical assistance to edx@cdc.com, which is the larger ELC mailbox.
Sorry. We don't use common, though.
No common, yeah, I forgot. I tried to go escape to the other side occasionally, but I'll stay on the other side for now. But edx@cdc.gov. And what that will do is send a message to us saying, you know, we need some help with this. We internally will look at what your request is, kind of look to see where we are with our time and resources and materials, reach back out to you to kind of assess when you may be able to receive that technical assistance, because there are a couple of different things that have to be in place ahead of time in terms of lining people up. But otherwise, we really are trying to help and provide as much, take away as much of the burden as we possibly can from the jurisdictions to really begin to implement these messages in the jurisdictions.
So is it okay to presume that because we write it into our ELT grant that one of these years you can get the ticket?
For the most part, we are trying to. And then looking at Jay's like, yeah. We definitely are going to get to it. It's kind of a matter of right now, we're, as I said, we're focusing on trying to get the pilots up and going, and then we will move and expand and pull more and more folks on. But we definitely intend to provide technical assistance to anyone who needs it to help implement the guides.
Thank you so much.
And I just want to clarify one thing. We aren't planning to turn off NETS until we've got people converted, but that means we need to help you convert, because we do want to get that conversion base.
I think mine is fairly straightforward. On one of your slides, you talked about the dashboard being available to, but it looked like you were talking about it in the context of all the new message mapping guides coming out. So for those of us already transmitting our provider with our valid generic one, will the dashboard be available to us too, or don't we?
So once we start letting people send data through the new messages, once any of those messages go into production, all the data for those diseases will get processed through MVPS, even if it's coming through the old messages. And at that point, you will be seeing your data come through MVPS and be able to see it in the dashboard. But only as we implement a message mapping guide will it start coming through the dashboard. Yeah, I really think that the dashboard is probably one of the things that will be most valuable to you folks, because you'll be able to see if there are any problems with the messages. You'll get the right, you know, the feedback quickly, and be able to recognize that there was something little in there that was needed and be able to fix it. So I'm excited about that. I think that's really going to be a help. But one of the features of the dashboard that I had mentioned to some people before, and it's not coming in the first version, and that I want to make a mention of, it, down the road, we want to have an indicator in there so you can see whether that record was included in the MMWR set. That won't be in the first version. That's going to come down the road. We just had to make the job manageable, and that was the thing we could best sacrifice. But that also seems like something that will be a real nice feature for you to have.
I agree. Thank you.
Hi, Laurie again. Just a question for Andrew. Because I didn't quite understand it. So you said something about supporting flip BBB messages, and I didn't really understand if we're like sending BBB messages through another mechanism, or if you could explain that a little bit more.
Flip BBB is not an MND program, so it's just currently what we're supporting in production now, but not related to MND.
So it would move to the
next. It would, yes.
So, and although we're working on developing MVPS to handle the new NND messages, MVPS, a very rudimentary version, already exists and is currently processing FLIP. So from Andrew's perspective, MVPS is already in operation. It's processing FLIP, and we're enhancing it to handle these new things.
So then what will happen to the messages that you're currently processing via FLIP?
They stay there.
Okay.
The flip messages are already in the new system, and they're going to continue that way. It's been invisible to you because we just never told you what was processing them.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Hi. This is Division. I just want to clarify flip for vaccine preventable disease reference lab, not for flip for flu. I just hope there's no confusion about that.
Okay.
There was.
Sorry about that. Flip is still going to data messaging and recurring in DS.
So
this is a four reference laboratory on MVPS right now.
I'm Cindy Roush. I wanted to make a comment about the harmonization process. It's really important. And although Leslie and Seth are not able to stop all the guide development and, well, I guess we're able to do whatever the right thing is going forward, but right now the plan is not to stop all the guide development and get the harmonization done perfectly well, but I did want to let you know that the my center, MCIRB, Vaccine Preventable Respiratory, has been able to, because we have two pathogens in the pilot for NMI, mumps and pertussis, we've been able to participate in the harmonization process. Mumps and pertussis don't look the same test-wise, clinically, and in presentation, but we've been able to, in this process, harmonize vaccine and lab in very high regard. In fact, between 90% and 100% of vaccine and lab variable questions on those two guides are identical, using the same NUID, Noyington, and all of that. And in fact, if you make the denominator, all of the variables on the guide, it, depending on whether you're comparing months to pertussis or pertussis to months, it's between 69% and 74% harmonized. And we were able to do that because those two passages, although they were, however you look at it, although they don't look the same epidemiologically and clinically, they are in our center. And we just wanted to take the initiative to look at this harmonization process and see if we were able to get in those two programs to do, you know, that work. And varicella is the next point up in our center anyway. And already in our pre-work, you know, somebody showed 1 through 4 on the front side, I guess that was. So in the pre-work that is being requested of the programs by C-cells, part of what we're supposed to do, look at what we're asking for and see if we can harmonize ahead. And we're at 50% harmonized. We haven't even handed that over to the vocabulary experts to make their recommendations back to us. So going forward, I think I wanted to just give that example of the CDC program's commitment to doing this harmonization work in their pre-work. You know, I'm extrapolating or extending to all the CDC programs, but, you know, we're just doing, we can do what we can do as we're going, so it's not like we have to wait and have horrible things happen in disregard to harmonization during the process.
Hi, this is Opa Benchak from New York. We are going to be the pilot test. So I have a question. We are currently doing version 1, generic version 1. And when we are doing the end of the year number, that's the due last month, and it's not consistent with your number, so we have to do some work. So we're trying to figure out which records are not in yours, which record in ours, or which record in yours, not in ours. So there's a lot of resource spent on that. So I wonder for the version 2, next time when we do this, can do easier way, or because I think one of the big reasons is we changed the case gear. So I don't know, it should be our side to try to figure out, or it's just we send you a new year-to-date file.
And I think the sending the year-to-date file is a solution that the DOT, the data operations team, has been using. One of the things that we want to do going forward when we have MVPS and we have the dashboard is to be able to let you see where there were issues, what might not have been incorporated, and then hopefully not too long down the road, have that indicator of whether it was included in the totals in MWR or not. So that will give you feedback. The transition, when half of the year or a portion of the year was coming through the new system and portion of it was coming through the old system, we think will be a challenge. And one of the things we are sitting down to do when we get back at the end of June is to talk about what the best strategy is going to be to handle that and how we can make it work. And we've got a couple of ideas in mind. We're not sure what will work best. So we need to explore some ideas and then propose them and get some feedback on, you know, from you folks on what will work.
So the next question is, so you were talking about to onboarding November, October, so that means you are not in production.
The only data that's in production in MVPS now is those, what is this, the flipped BPD data.
Okay.
But yeah, so none of the others are in production yet.
Hello, Annie, I'm from New York State. I do think a lot of the states and local jurisdictions have had some experience with trying to do data harmonization, maybe not across all of our programs, but we've definitely struggled with a lot of these concepts and trying to get people to come to consensus. And it's good to hear that we've achieved some of that with most of pertussis, but sometimes it's just like finishing the house, and that finish work is the part that can take a lot of the time. And I wonder how much input you have in this process from state and local jurisdictions that have already done this, and that it might be helpful, even to the extent of knowing that maybe something that you're spending a lot of time trying to harmonize is worthless anyway because you're not going to get the data. Like, there's a lot of things I've seen on those method timing guides that are just unrealistic. There's no way we're going to get outcome. You're not going to get outcome. So if you're arguing over, like, well, what's the outcome? Does the person die? Does the person get discharged? Does the person recover? We're not going to get that for you. So you might as well not do it. So all I'm asking is, to what extent do you have, like, frontline public health involved in the conversations to reality facts?
So we did some preliminary work to try to group the data elements and recognize that we couldn't do it with the team that we have because we just don't have the resources. So it's going to be a broader team, and we're not going to be convening it. We did strongly recommend, though, that there were health department people, I mean, state and local health department people included in the discussion. And we really feel that that's important. And I think the fact that we have heard that from you today and that other people here have heard that is an opportunity for us to go back and say, hey, look, we've got people at the state and local level who have done this work, and they're willing to be part of this effort. You know, we're anticipating, and of course, part of the way we perceived it was, you know, this would probably be at least weekly calls with a, you know, a small group focused on a small set of data elements, and that's part of why we broke it down into all those subgroups. So that the group could come in and a lot of the pre-work was done, they could sit down and look at something concrete and make some definitions, make some decisions, and have a group, you know, assigned to a small set of the data elements, work through them, pull in the people from all the different diseases, and then, you know, put that one to bed and move on to the next one. I definitely think that the experience that you guys have had is important, and that feedback. And we have encouraged the jurisdiction, or sorry, I have trouble with my words because I'm used to talking from a state perspective. We've encouraged the programs, when they are thinking about what data elements they want, to talk to the folks who submit the data to them and get that sense of, is this realistic to ask for? And there may be times where, you know, you say, look, you know, we maybe can give it to you 5% of the time, and they're going to say, we still want it that 5%. You know, so they may say it's important to keep. But it also may be one of those things where they say, you know, yeah, we've always wanted it, and it's always been pretty empty, and maybe it's not worth asking for. They really need to hear that feedback, because they need that element of reality of what's reasonable to expect. So I think, please, as the opportunities come out, look for the folks who are your disease experts and encourage them to take part in these processes. And, you know, you can see, if you're asking a travel question, you're going to have a whole lot of different disease programs involved in that. And so from CDC, we can pull together those programs, hopefully. And, you know, if the jurisdictions pick somebody who's, you know, expert in at least one of those areas and get them to be part of it, hopefully we'll get a good spread of people. At least we get some reasonable information and input.
Yeah, and if you recall part of my presentation, it was recommended when we turned over this summary, the 18 summaries I mentioned it to the leadership, is that the programs do reach out to the jurisdictions on the conditions to have them represented on these work groups. We did recommend that, but hoping that will be followed up. Definitely invite them in.
Hi, I'm Tennessee. I just wanted to echo Lori's comments about having the jurisdictions go through the work of implementing the guides, which in some instances actually require quite significant surveillance systems work or migration from one surveillance system to another, then having to then being expected to supply either additional data formats or maybe in instances where you were sending more robust data before, now the programs are asking you to send paper. I echo Lori's comments and concerns. And I certainly appreciate the work that Sandy Center is doing in evaluating commonalities and harmonization between those two conditions, but we still have 80 additional conditions to work through, which I think goes back to some of the information that Bill provided. And kind of taking a step back to our conversation over the past couple of days looking at case reporting, I think the travel question was a good example. I think in looking at how we're going to use structured data capture to ask for additional supplemental data, developing those forms, I think you really are going to have to think hard about how we're going to harmonize asking some of these questions, both on the front end, the data collection, as well as the back end, and sending that information to CDC. If nothing more, just for maintaining semantic understanding and maintaining that so we know what we're looking at and talking about when we analyze our forms information. The other thing that I would mention, I certainly
certainly appreciate the technical assistance that's going to be provided, both for the work that's been going on with DLR and providing technical support, as well as with NMI. And Tennessee is actually fortunate that we do have an NetSpace system, and we're going to be able to utilize those resources. But I wonder about maybe some of the states that might actually have to pay their vendor to make changes to their system, and how technical assistance will be able to support those sorts of changes given this timeline.
Thank you.
As I mentioned earlier, we're working across all the jurisdictions and trying to work with some of those vendor-based systems. And as we're working through the TA process, we're trying to figure out if there are ways in which, through technical assistance, we can actually figure out a way to get that information that you need out of those systems without having to go through your actual system. So a number of different options are on the table as now, but a number of places have either ways in which they can take out files and place them in another database that they can then use to send the messages. We're literally at the stage where we're now trying to dig into this to figure out ways in which we can, if possible, provide technical assistance to help offset that cost of what it may cost if they need to go to the vendors to implement those messages. We will try to support some of the money and resources to be able to provide to states who need that vendor support, but as you know, funds are always tight and very limited, so we're trying to figure out a way in which we can provide that assistance through TA versus providing funds, or at least giving the options to jurisdictions so that they can go through the TA mechanism route, or figuring out if there is a way that they can support building that information into their system that may be a vendor-based system when we're not fully able to pay for it or support it on our end.
Yeah. I do want to clarify, though, we don't have a pool of money that's going to pay your vendor bills. So that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is we're trying to give you TA so that you don't get faced with bills like that, and trying to help you find ways to make the needed changes without having to pay the vendor.
And similarly, neither did the NCIRB component intend for me to be able to fund, you know, the work you might choose to do for enhanced protective surveillance through that new FOA opportunity this year. But there were some states and other jurisdictions who did include a bit of funding within that FOA opportunity, you know, that, you know, within their application, to pay for a bit of the component, say, of linking DLR into NMDSS or IIS linkages into NMDSS for vaccine history. And I just mentioned that as, you know, there's probably not going to be one large part of money that would pay for all these components, but, you know, when our center was thinking about what we're asking state partners to do with these message guides, it's probably a feeble attempt, but it's at least an attempt to make that infrastructure available if you need that. And there were some jurisdictions that did include that in their response.
And I think we need to tie up now. Meredith is giving us the sign that we're out of time, but Janet, Jen, do you want to make a closing remark?
I just wanted to say that, this is Janet Hamilton from Florida, that I think this has been a really good conversation, and I appreciate having the dialogue, and I really recognize that, you know, this is the continuum, and the relationship between jurisdictions and states is so important. And it's really nice that we had some of the CDC programs here. I would also say that, you know, at the state and jurisdiction level, we are becoming more and more integrated across those programs, and our surveillance systems are supporting that. And while I think it's wonderful, you know, that we did hear from you, Sandy, about your center, I would also challenge the group that it's not just one center, and it's working across those where there's going to be even more challenges that are associated with harmonization. And so I guess what I'm asking, if I haven't asked here, is that message can go back, that we need that cross-center collaboration to really make this work.
Thank you.
Can I get an amen for that?